Call to order, oops, and roll call. I call the September 5th, 2017 Special Projects and Facilities Committee meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, would you please call the roll and note the time?
All right, 7:03. Member Boren?
Yes.
Member Gaines?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes.
Also in attendance is Commissioner Lennon. Okay. All right.
Okay, so...
You took my little cheat sheet, so I can't tell what we're doing.
Okay, so someone named Lisa will lead the discussion. I believe it's you.
That would be me, yeah. Okay, so back in, I believe it was July, we began discussion on the capital project. We gave you some ideas. We came back with some other ideas to move things up. So in the meantime, as you can see by the memo that we included in here, Chris and I went and did some research, looked at the status of some of the playgrounds, looked at some of the recommendations you made, and made some recommendations for going forward. So in our packet, Exhibit A is what was agreed to, or talked about after last meeting. So this is what the changes we had at that meeting. Attachment B is what staff is recommending, staff recommendations for it. So if we can go just through each little light item, and we'll refer to B. Lights up all the way.
I believe they are. Let me just double check that.
We'll go through B, yeah, if you don't mind. We'll have A out for discussion. Oh, that's even darker. Could be that my eyes are going. That could be it too. Okay, so the first one we had is...
And Lisa, just for clarity...
Sure, please.
May I please ask you to tell us exactly how these recommendations, how inflexible or flexible they are. So in other words, if we then say, yes, we're going to pass this or this or this and move it on to the board... Once we do that, are we committing ourselves, for instance, to $20,000 for the master plan for Sheldon Park? We're committing, we're doing it.
So what I would say is that if whatever passes in September, hopefully not October, is for 2018-19 is what you're committing to. Not the exact dollar amount.
Okay.
But we're committing to those projects moving forward.
Okay, so
that
that's
way,
the distinction. We're committing to the projects, but we're not committing to, for instance, $500,000 here, $300,000 there. It may be a little bit of a mix between the two, depending on how things play out with the planning process.
Well, I guess you would say, but that guy who gives it to the ballpark.
Okay, that's
so,
the guide.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
I understood that correctly. We'll make a recommendation to the board. The board might possibly discuss it. But if we say we approve up to $500,000 for the redo of Wedgewood Park, that then puts a ceiling on what we can consider without further board action.
Correct. But it also allows us to say, you know what, the plan is now that we're going to spend $300,000, that $200,000 we really need over here and we're changing. So it provides a ceiling but doesn't require a commitment to that dollar amount.
Well, no, we can certainly have it try to come in lower. We've done that on a number of projects.
And move funds between projects.
Well, if we have a $300,000 ceiling on something else, we can't take $200,000 from here and make that $300,000 higher without board action.
So we typically use the total project budget as a negotiating tool when we bring in consultants or professionals because we negotiate the percentage. So by having that, I mean... We look at that number and we don't typically want to budget up to the ceiling of the project before we even start to execute the project. We like to be conservative beyond that.
Right. Right. So at least what he's saying is that when we bring in the design and go to Altman and say, for example, Lincoln and Crescent, he might go to Lincoln, to the architects and say, okay, we have $200,000 to spend on this project. Mm-hmm. So that they bring in design, that's $200,000.
Right.
Okay. So if we went in and at the same time we said we want to spend $500,000, say, at Woodlawn, they'll bring us a project of that once we start talking and once we get into the planning stages.
Got it. Okay. All right.
Make sense?
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. So Shelton Park, we currently are representing $70,000 for pathway to fix the pathways. What we are recommending, I'm going to shorten this, is that this year we spend $20,000 on a master plan for the whole site. The reason is that when we started talking about the playground, and you guys were not on the board yet, but you were, people started coming out of the woodwork, and they called Chris quite a bit on that park, different things we do. So what we're afraid of is that we'll go in and fix the pathways we have, and at the same time, people will come out of the woodwork and say, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing this? It doesn't look like we know what we're doing when we just fix pathways.
Can you give us an example of what those things were?
Chris?
It could be rerouting the pathways. It could be looking at drainage. It could be looking at different landscaping. Less of a go in and fix a problem and more of a let's take a look at the whole site and what makes sense. Maybe it's the location of the pathway. Maybe we want to look at routing it somewhere differently. We'll make it longer, shorter, those types of things, versus just saying here's the absolute routing of the pathway. We want to stay on that routing. That routing may cost us more to maintain than a new routing. We just don't know because... Mm-hmm. We're looking at repairing it like a Band-Aid versus, hey, let's take a look at the whole site and go from there.
My concern is that we have so much going on at Shelton Park. In my mind, Shelton Park runs from the open space area just north of the tennis courts, where I always envisioned a dog park, another conversation another day, all the way south to, what is that, Harbor Street?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, that's all Shelton Park. We have so much going on there with our proximity to the Glencoe Community Garden, the tennis courts, the kids' play structure, gazebo, picnic areas, walking path, wetlands-type plantings, this path we're talking about. We really need to look at the whole parcel as a whole and say, are we using this to the best of our ability? Are we handcuffing ourselves by committing to a path here without looking at the whole thing?
Right. And it doesn't mean...
Pardon?
So you're agreeing with our recommendation?
I'm thinking the recommendation, that should have been our first thought a year ago.
So what we're saying is that, I'm not saying that we have to, when we do this master plan, it doesn't mean the next year we're allocating $70,000 next year. That might be all we do. And that might be all we do if they come back with a plan that says... options A, B, C, D, E. Mm-hmm. We might only do A, and then B, C, D won't be done for 10 years, mm-hmm. or whatever. Yeah. But at least whatever we do in A doesn't have to be taken out when
we need a blueprint for future.
So that's what this is—a small blueprint.
Because it's
yes.
a large piece of land, and one
yes.
doesn't know what else one might want to do with it.
Exactly.
And this, so this $20,000 will afford us the pathways. Architecture, where it's going to be, and drainage as it relates to drainage.
No, it would be just a master plan of what we could do.
So there would be conceptual.
Yes.
So we could say, well, we want to conceptually look at maintaining the pathway in its existing location. Mm-hmm. What would that cost to raise that up or drain that properly? Mm-hmm. Or we want to look at plan B and run the pathway along the east side of the property and make it longer, make it more scenic, those types of things. That might be component B. You know, depending on a community input process, we may hear, let's expand the wetland, let's look for prairie plantings, let's look for those kinds of things. That might be a component C. Mm-hmm. I think that just like Lisa said and Steve said, this is really our second most developed passive use park. And I think it's really important to get a future plan for this right versus just going right in and saying, tear it out, put concrete in, go move on.
Yeah.
That was my thought process behind the recommendations.
Yes.
Do we get calls on this park from residents? And what are the calls about? And
typically the calls I get are related to the pathway in the park being flooded. They're related to the condition of the Green Bay Trail in the park, which... This is the section of the Green Bay Trail that we actually own. We get calls regarding the condition.
Okay.
Yeah, so between the tennis courts and harbor, we actually own that.
Hmm.
So we get calls about the condition of the asphalt. Why is it asphalt? Can it be something else?
Mm-hmm.
We get calls about conditions of the landscaping there. Not a whole lot of calls about the playground since we replaced it.
Right.
We have been working with some tennis groups regarding the condition of the tennis court, but the park itself, I get a lot of calls about the pathway being flooded and the wetness of the park.
Uh-huh.
Pretty routinely in the rainy season.
What about, for lack of a better word, the screening of the snow area?
I realize
that's not your land.
Well, I do get calls with that. We have worked with the village to work together to increase the screening. I mean, I don't necessarily know if it's exactly what those particular individuals were hoping for. I mean, we're just not able to plant 40-foot arborvitaes all the way along the railroad tracks.
But they did
a number of plantings there. We've worked with them on that. We do get calls about that. Folks have figured out that that is the village's issue, so they've started to funnel those calls to the village, but I have met out there with those particular residents on a number of occasions in Dayton.
And we're working with the Green Bay Trail on a section of that. You know, so we'll continue to do that in that area, but this just gives us a plan moving forward. It's almost like caretake up. Let's plan it so that we don't tear out what we're doing for the next. So plan up front and then fix the trail. Because, you know, Altamont, you might have a great idea. The engineers that work for Altamont, you might have a great idea.
I mean, because the issues with the drainage, the issues with the drainage start exactly where the boundaries of the 2004 project stop.
Yeah.
So we put in drainage in a portion of the park. We didn't do the whole park. The park floods where there's no drainage. So at the same time, you know, it's they did the scope of what they could do at that time, and I think it's time to come back and look at that.
And I know that the dog park is controversial, and we've tried a number of times. Is it possible that the population of that area has changed? Could we try it there again, or you think that the population has not changed?
Well, here's what I think we should do about dog park, because people keep on bringing it up, right? And I think we should, and the board has always said it would be a donor item. If we could find, you know, a donor, that's what the previous board said, that when we do a dog park. I think we should just have a community meeting. One of you guys' skins are really thick. And just vet all the different spaces, throw them up there, and make sure that those neighborhoods, whatever we throw up there, get them then invited to, you know, we could have the committee meeting and say, okay, these are all the ideas that all the staff has. And then invite the public, send notices out, say we're considering, you know, we're talking about dog park in this area, and just see what happens.
I just think it's funny because every time I'm at that park, there's a ton of dogs. And of all the parks I go to, that's the one where, I mean, a ton. Like, we'll go there on a Friday night, we'll have the kids, and we meet, you know, we do like a lot of fast play dates there, and there's just a ton of dogs in that area. So it just, I just wanted to mention it.
There's a ton of dogs throughout.
My concern is with that would be, since that is the Green Bay Trail, whether it's on the village land or the park district land, depending on which part of the park we're talking about. If you have a lot of runners and bikers through there, having people getting chased by dogs really...
Well, it would be fenced.
It would
be a fenced dog park, so they couldn't be chased.
Yeah, that would
but it would be loud.
Fun.
Yeah, we don't want that.
A playground would be a problem for that,
But I think if you guys are really serious about looking for a dog park location, I think then we just have to start seriously vetting it in the community, because there's other parcels we can show you, different areas that could, you could fit one in and the area around it, and just have a frank discussion of, you know, whose backyard is going to go in. And
that's less of an infrastructure discussion, more of a political discussion.
Yes, that is.
Yes,
exactly.
It is.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on that one? Okay. So then we move down to Woodlawn Park. Okay. So in Attachment A, Woodlawn Park was... Woodlawn Park was for this year. What we're recommending is increasing that park to about 100,000 because of the footprint of that park and the land accessible there. So with the success of West Park, you see what we can do. And should we do something that's a little more exciting, a little more accessible in that quadrant of the town?
Okay, so we've spoken about this. We've spoken about this. One of the concerns that's raised is how this playground and the commitment of this $500,000 fits into the larger plan, so that couple of these projects feel interconnected. The Inner Green Bay plan, which has potential to be something really, you know,
wonderful.
You know, wonderful or special, slash expensive.
Goes
I'm trying really hard not to say that word. They're connected. So once we say yes, we know we need that amount of money to do something elaborate-ish. We've committed it to that location. And I feel like there are too many reasons that we're just not quite at the point where we know that that's where we want to commit that that amount of money. That we don't, that perhaps this requires a thorough discussion about another area, Inner Green Bay, and which would be the best for what we think we want to do.
Well,
what do you think of that?
Well, in Inner Green Bay, and Chris, you can speak to this, we also have replacement of Lincoln Crescent
Playground.
Right. And
yes.
At the smaller area over there for $225 for that footprint of it. Now,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's for the footprint playground. Doesn't mean that we can't do something else on the linear parks, and we have allocated $365 the following year for that area.
Right.
So,
but without a really, without a plan ahead of time, without a discussion about a plan ahead of time, we don't know if Lincoln and Crescent might fold into what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
those two things might even be, and maybe that's where we do something for maybe the older kids, and that would change what we do for Woodlawn and might change the commitment of funds for Woodlawn. I just don't know if I know where we're headed with those two really big projects.
So what I see, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the first steps we'll be doing is doing the plan for the community meetings and the board input and discussion on the old Green Bay Linear Park. So that would be the first thing we would do,
okay.
Have that discussion on that
okay.
area.
So Lisa, I can talk a little bit about that budget number for
okay.
Woodlawn. I think the budget number gives us the opportunity, because really that is one of the largest parcels we have that isn't developed into an athletic field or a very passive use park. So the thinking behind the budget is that number gives us the flexibility to do things like a potentially poured-in-place surface on the playground where we would normally have chips at a smaller neighborhood park. It also gives us the flexibility to look at things like net climbers and gathering areas that might appeal to older kids, or we have the footprint there to really spread out the play site where we're not going to be attracting the 13 and 14 year olds 6 feet from the area that we're attracting the 2 to 4 year olds. I mean, like when you go to Friends Park, we have this really great net climber, and like 12 feet away we have the Todd area. So there we actually have that footprint to push it out where we can have that designated area that's going to be really attractive to that preteen tween group, whatever that may be, whether it's, you know, athletic components or a climber or something like that, and we have the same space that we could look for, you know, things that might be attractive to other people, or, you know, potentially a shade structure, the types of things that we've talked about and not really been able to cram into our neighborhood parks. So by committing to the $500,000, I don't think we're committing to having it, but we're not committing to spending it. And so if we go to develop the park, like Lisa said, and it turns out that we can accomplish what the board is looking for at $425,
or even $400,
we just do that.
Right, during the planning process, and then we could allocate that money, that $100,000 back over to this park over here, because these will all be planned at the same time.
Okay. Josh, I know you have something to say.
Yeah. I think I feel the same way that you two do, but potentially for a different reason,
mm-hmm.
Which I'd like to elaborate on. I also will point out that this was my neighborhood park when my kids were your kids'
which
age.
Which one? Mm-hmm. With Lana. Okay.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time in that
yeah.
park. We as a community are just incredibly blessed with the resources that we have. And like I talk to other commissioners and employees of other park districts or villages, and like to have the resources that we have is just amazing. And at the same time though, I look at what I pay in taxes, and sometimes I feel like, I just look at this number of $500,000, I'm like, are we building something because we can or because we should? And I'd really like to take a step back here and think about, you know, just because we can do a poured in place service or we could do something bigger there doesn't mean we should spend our money on that, right? Maybe it means we spend it on Lincoln and Crescent or Old Green Bay, or maybe it means we don't spend it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, having been there a lot, I mean, it's delightful. It doesn't need a shade structure. It's very shady there to begin with. It is occasionally wet, but honestly, that never bothered me. Having moved from the city, I was like, hey, there's nature here. It was, in other words, it wasn't so soupy that you couldn't go use the play structures. If it needs replacement because it's a wood playground, I would support that. But I'm not, at this stage, really excited about saying, let's go do another West school there. I don't think it's going to have nearly the visitors that either Friends or Shelton or West would have just because of its location.
Okay, so that's where we were at. And so when I really started thinking about it, and I drive by there all the time, and then driving by the Union Crescent, and then seeing that these kids that are older need more to do, which is why they're taking their bikes and their scooters onto West when they shouldn't be, because they don't, just don't have enough to do. So that's how we started talking about it. And then I went to Winnetka's Park, and I looked at theirs, and it's like, well, why did they build that? Because it's their downtown park, and it brings people to the downtown, which is our premier park, which is Friends, which is a beautiful park, and we're going to replace things there, and we need to put more for older kids there, too. Because when we started talking, at Friends,
we can't put any more equipment in Friends Park.
No, and we're going to replace some of the stuff that was taken out. So whatever we put back in, we could do for older kids. But what we were saying was, the kids, after they leave Central School, they all come to the downtown. Mm-hmm. They go to Starbucks. They go to Friends Park because it's close. When we were saying, are they going to go all the way to Woodlawn? I don't think so. It's too far. Will they cross over the train and go to the Lincoln Crescent area? We think they would, because it's close enough for them to get there. It's called, it's all the linear parks. What are we really doing there? I know the neighbors there would be difficult. I know we're limited in that. We have to think about that as well. But that's what why we started thinking about that. Also, it's hard to look at four parks and all that money and be okay with that in 1 year. It's a lot, and I think we just wanted to slow it down and say, okay, what is in total disrepair that we have to do? We know we took out the Verdon and Jefferson. We know that community wants a park there. We've told them it's going to be there. Mm-hmm. We have to do that one.
Right.
We know that every neighborhood deserves a nice playground, and we can't just pick and choose and say, okay, well, this neighborhood gets it, this one doesn't. But I think what we're trying to say is, let's think a little bit outside of the box. Let's look at how kids are really playing. Both Lisa and I went to Winnetka. We looked at how kids are playing. It's not necessarily in the big structures. Sometimes it's other cool equipment. You know, we don't have to say,
where is this one?
Here's 225.
It's over here. So we're not designing right now. We know there's cool features.
Downtown.
Right. Cool.
But we're saying we're not, I think, if we were in agreement, I think we were, that we're not ready to say we want to do four parks next year.
Okay.
We'd rather do two and really think about what the needs of the community are, which is what you're saying too. What is really our needs here? And like we said, we know we have to do Vernon and Jefferson, or whatever, I keep
saying. That's good, yep.
You know, and is there another one that's really in disrepair that's gonna come out where communities are gonna say, okay, you took it out, we can't replace it?
Well, you have the potential for every single playground we just added, that is a potential that we might have to take it out next year. So you just have to be prepared, and that's fine, that we may take something out and not replace it for a year or two. If you guys are okay with that, then we saw how upset the board got when we had to take out a playground, we couldn't put it back in, and how upset the people are. He gets calls weekly, because when are you putting that playground in? When are you putting that playground in? So all four of those playgrounds have a potential. I can't guarantee it. We didn't expect Verdon and Jefferson to go. But, you know, after we went and looked at those playgrounds, there's a potential that we might have to take them out next spring, depending on the weather, you know, sometime in the summer. So if you're okay with saying we're going to take them out and not replace them that year, then that's fine. But you have to be willing to do that.
I don't know that I'm willing to do that. Couple of comments. Are you pretty certain you were looking at high school kids when you were looking at Friends Park? What I found, having had kids grow...
Middle school.
Okay, middle school, I would agree with you. We do have middle school kids certainly congregating at Friends Park and at other places, but not high school. High school, they seem to go to Old Orchard and to Gilson. Glencoe High School.
Basketball, too.
Okay.
Regarding
the four parks that I see, that I think we're talking about, the Lincoln Crescent, Vernon Jefferson, the Lakefront Park Playground, and Woodlawn Playground, we have been surprised in the recent past by the pace of deterioration once they start to rot. And I, for one, if we're aware that we could be in that situation again or it's impending, would like to start planning for replacing those as quickly as we're able. Does the $500,000 number at Woodlawn give me pause for thought? You betcha. I consider Woodlawn to be a neighborhood park. I think Shelton is a step above that, like Friends. And I think Lakefront is a step above that. But I consider Woodlawn to be an expansive but neighborhood park. And I feel the same way about Lincoln and Crescent, that it's a neighborhood park. It's not in an ultra-compact footprint, but I don't think, based on the number of people that frequent that because of convenience, that we need to step up our game at those places. I think we can achieve a pretty spectacular but much more reasonably priced goal there.
Mm-hmm. But just to mention, Lincoln and Crescent gets a lot of camp use.
It does.
Because they have a tent there.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the camp groups go there, and I know the preschool uses it, and TJK, we always meet there. So just to throw that out there, that it has use for other areas, and if we have cool structures along those linear, the camp groups might use it more.
Well, and I think the real issue is it's connected. It's not isolated like an island. It's connected to the whole Inner Green Bay thing, and we don't really have a plan for that yet. So would we then put a tot lot at Lincoln and Crescent only to discover that it really should be folded in to what we do in Inner Green Bay?
Yeah.
We don't have that big picture idea about what we're doing yet.
But that's what we're going to do. We're allocating money to do that master plan for this year, right?
We are, but I don't want to commit to breaking ground at Lincoln and Crescent for a tot lot.
If we didn't say we would, and we didn't say we're going to do a tot lot.
Okay.
Right? It doesn't say anything about
it. It says Lincoln and
Playground replacement.
Okay.
It doesn't say
so.
Well, that's the term we're using for that playground replacement.
Yes, but we didn't use that term at all.
Well,
so it's $225,000.
Right.
A tot would be two to five.
The language, could you describe what you have in mind for Lincoln and Crescent?
I have no idea yet. Because we have to develop this plan first. So it all stems up from this plan. We have money allocated. We haven't designed or picked out the play features yet. Because this is just allocating money. We haven't designed every park yet. So we're going to look at, see what comes out of this plan, and then go from there and design that.
So your idea is you do the old Green Bay Linear Parks master plan sort of first, if
yes.
you will. And then knowing what that master plan is, you'd recommend what we spend the $225,000 on for Lincoln and Crescent.
Yes.
If that's the case, I'd be okay with it. It's just really having the plan first because it to me they are connected. I drove by it again on the way.
I don't disagree with you there. You're totally connected.
Okay.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
And another little fly in the ointment caused by their great success today at West School, there may be a reason down the road that South School might ask us to join with them on a South School playground. If we would do that, then that would be sort of the neighborhood for, K through 2 for that age group.
Which I always thought it already was. I thought Woodlawn was a park of convenience, but people used South schools, playgrounds, in combination with the things that we've had.
But that's all
South
kind of part of the district.
South is close to Woodlawn.
I live between both of them.
Yeah.
And my family, we just sort of chose depending on the day. It had nothing to do with how old the kids were.
Right.
Yeah.
Just,
if you go to Woodlawn, you get people who generally live a little bit further east. If you go to South, it's people who generally live a little bit further west.
Yeah.
And I don't mean east and west Glencoe. Mm-hmm. I just mean around sort of my house being the middle, if I could, put myself at the center of the universe.
It's a beautiful piece of land, and it requires, doing the right thing.
Well, yeah, that's why we have this in the faith, without a doubt. We're on the same page there. That's what we're exactly what we're thinking, too.
Right.
Chris, what would you give a wild stab in the dark if we were simply to replace the equipment with modern replacements at Woodlawn? What would something like that run?
Woodlawn, so let's say we looked at it really depends on what we want to accomplish. I mean, because you'd look at a Shelton Park. So what we did at Shelton, we're not going to be able to, I would imagine, reuse the existing sidewalks, curves. We're going to run into the same thing that we ran into at Astor, which is the safety zones have increased. The footprint's going to get larger. I mean, let's say we're at that $225,000 number. We're going to be at basically what we did at Astor, maybe a little bit larger. We're going to have to make a decision on whether or not we want to retain the drinking fountain. Because if the drinking fountain is in there, we're going to run 15 to 20 for that to get that up to 2017 codes. So if we're, say we're, the, for Shelton Park, the playground itself, if it was a brand new footprint, that's about a $400,000 playground. So the play equipment, the curbs, the sidewalks, the chips, the landscaping, that's what a playground that size would run us. We could run somewhere in the middle between the neighborhood. It really depends on what we want to accomplish. The idea of play pods or equipment that's spread out, that's higher impact equipment, that's probably going to be more expensive than putting it all together. Because we're going to have drainage to each piece of equipment, we're going to have curbs, sidewalks. While it seems on the surface like that may be a cost-effective approach, probably going to be more expensive to spread the equipment out. That's typically why equipment is put together, for supervision purposes and for construction purposes. So it really depends on what we want to do. I mean, you look at what we did at West Park, that playground itself, notwithstanding the discovery area, notwithstanding the tree feeders, the asphalt, that's about a $420,000 playground with professional services. West School.
So just
the actual playground. So the concrete, the safety surfaces, the equipment, that's obviously has a very high degree of difficulty because of the elevations, the architecture firm that we've chose. So we can get a very, very nice playground for in the 3 to 4 range. Mm-hmm. We can get a neighborhood playground with a drinking fountain for that 225 range. I mean, Astor is going to come in probably around 200, and we were fortunate that we were able to tie into existing drainage. We probably don't have that at some of these sites. That's kind of best case scenario.
Yeah.
So 225 to 300 for really anything that would meet this community's expectations, service-wise, appearance-wise, longevity-wise. So,
I would say if you're gonna invest in a water fountain, do it next to like the where you're having exercise, right? Like high impact stuff, like the thing in Shelton Park.
Mm-hmm. The expense is,
people don't go to Woodlawn Park and work out.
Correct. Right?
They're watching their kids sitting under 50 giant oak trees.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. So
their kids are running around.
You see the dogs drinking out of the fountains all the time as well.
Yeah.
It's the people think drinking fountain. I mean, it's really the expense of tapping the water main, properly draining it, having a backflow prevent. I know it all. It's all the nitty gritty of it, but If we wanted to say going forward, we're not going to put drinking fountains in neighborhood parks anymore, we would be shaving $20,000 off the budget of every project going forward. We were going to say, okay, they're only going to be at the athletic fields.
Yeah.
Well, this is the age of bottles, of water bottles.
True.
And it wasn't the case 20 years ago and 50 years ago when all these parks were originally designed. Families don't walk out of their house without throwing a couple of water bottles or reusables on their stroller or in their wagon.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
So I have not heard you say anything in the last few minutes that got me up to the $500,000 possible budget for Woodlawn.
Okay. Well, we don't have to. There's things you could do, like you could put, it's such a big site, you could do an oval track around it so that you could put like either concrete or a port in place, really. To have mounds and kids to ride around, you know, to make it kind of like a BMX track, but not really, because it would look nicer. It's not mud. You could do something like that, but we could also do something like that along the old Green Bay. I was one that was advocating the linear skateboard parks, and which you could also do, you know, that could be for BMX bikes and
And there you go. You've got the junior high school kids.
Right. That's what I was thinking all along for Old Green Bay is to do something unique like that. So that's not the playground. That goes in that $335,000 range because you do something linear along that path. You do, you know, something interesting there. So we definitely don't have to do is if you're thinking of, we look at Woodlawn as a community park just because of the location of it. But if you're thinking, because we don't have a community park in that location, if you're thinking that no one's good, not a lot of people play, that's more of a neighborhood park, we can definitely reduce that. Just the expectation on that big site will be not a huge playground.
Mm-hmm. It'll be something similar to what we have, we'll have in the other neighborhood parks.
Yep.
Or the other, you know, pocket park, something like an Old Elm or a...
Won't be played. It would be
wood
it would
chips.
Not be handy, you know, university accessible playground.
Yeah.
We have two now, so it would not be that. This one would have. That's what we were looking at for university accessibility.
That does increase
so
the cost.
It does increase the cost.
And we have
a
footprint for it there as well.
But and I hear that, there's two concerns, and I'm sort of my counsel to myself for a minute. One is I heard some concern about doing four parks in 1 year, and the other is a lot of concern about $500,000 at Woodlawn is not what the board has in mind, and I certainly agree with that. With respect to the former, I'm kind of on the fence, and I just. But those are the two major issues I'm hearing as I listen to the commissioners talk.
Yeah, if you don't want to do, we are already with two university accessible playgrounds. We're above average. We do
typical,
not have, we're typical. Probably more for a community our size. So we do not, that was building in a university accessible.
I mean, I think based on the condition of our playgrounds, if I could sit here and advance all seven Wood playgrounds in 1 year, I would do it based on the condition. But I don't think that we have the funding for that. Mm-hmm. And so I think we got to hammer back to the fact that these playgrounds, we're ticking down on a 3-year lifespan here. We were already going to do Lakefront this year. We chose not to do it.
And Lakefront's not scheduled for next year.
Not scheduled for next year.
For next year, not this year.
This recommendation is really based on the condition. And I'm not a Chicken Little, the sky is falling kind of manager. But, you know, we have had some close calls with our playgrounds in the past with condition. And I just want to eliminate having to remove a playground. And that was based on the recommendation.
We want to be more proactive than reactive. And we do.
We're still catching up from the building out of this building.
We are. We're behind on the playground replacement. So we're trying to build up. If you want to move down Woodlawn to, say, 300 and know it's going to be a neighborhood park footprint with wood chips, not university accessible, we can make a really nice playground for that.
Absolutely.
Well, this is definitely making me feel better. It's just, I think it was we wanted to make sure that the Lincoln and Crescent was definitely thought out with the linear, because that's a real opportunity there. That whole area is still our downtown. Mm-hmm. It's connected to Calk.
I agree.
It's so much land. It could be really something special, like we've all said. So knowing that we're going to think about that first makes me feel a lot better than just saying, here's $225 for a tot lot, because we could do that all day.
It's not a tot lot. It's not a tot lot now.
No.
It's a K through 12.
So a tot lot, as an industry standard, is defined as a 2 to 5, and a school age is a 5 to 12. So what we did at West School is considered a school age playground, which is a 5 to 12. What we have out back at Takeoff here, these are truly our only dedicated tot lot. That's a 2 to 5.
What's Aster?
Aster is a 2 to 12.
No. Yeah, but no one beyond 5 is playing at Lincoln and Crescent. I mean, that's like...
But it's technically a 2 to 12.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. So like elements like the tire swing, belt swings, those are not designed for 5-year-olds. Okay. Those are designed for the 5 to 12-year-olds. The height of the slide, the height of the decks, it can get really technical, but all of our playgrounds other than Takeoff are not dedicated tot lots.
Right.
Well, we're going to spend the money, which of course we want our community to be nice. We want nice parks. We want it to be cool. I know we're not designing today. But we want to just make sure that we're not just slapping together 4 parks and putting them up there just because. And that goes to your point, too. Just because we can't.
I think you know that we would not do that. I would hope you would know right now that we're going to slap things together and put whatever. That we are going to think creatively. And what's nice about doing 4 playgrounds at once is that you can make them distinct. You can look at them and say, okay, we're meeting this age group here, and this one's close enough to here. We're going to meet this age. So when you talk about Friends Park, we probably aren't good. We're going to replace some equipment, but we're not trying to make that a middle-aged school park. We just can't. There's too much equipment in that park anyways. So when I was thinking of Lincoln Crescent, I liked that idea of trying to draw the middle school kids to that park away from Friends Park. That appeals to me. Whether there's really cool things they're doing out there. They're almost doing like a ninja warrior type playground.
Uh-huh.
They're
gladiator.
Doing like a gladiator kind of playground.
Like a combine. It's really
that,
interesting.
A combine
stuff.
That appeals to both boys and girls. That is
Can
does
you put
movement.
A Starbucks over there.
But the thing is,
I think Starbucks is set up there if you ask them to.
They have ones that go like one all around.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, it's really
these
cool.
are great ideas. But or what if? Let me do a what if. What if we get so much pushback from the people in that area?
Right.
We realize. Oh, no, we can't do it there. Oops, we should have done it at Woodlawn.
Well, you're right.
That's my problem. My problem is I don't even have a problem with committing $500,000 to Woodlawn. We may need it. That might be what makes that park really great. That isn't really my problem. My problem is how interconnected all of these projects really are and that they're interdependent on each other.
So what I would recommend is that the reason we're doing this so early and the reason we want to have approval in September is that we start those discussions with the public sooner rather than later.
At this point?
Yeah.
One of the reasons we're kind of churning in the same place here is because none of us have gotten on board because we haven't found what our mission or our vision is for these projects. We start to get excited, as you guys do, as staff does, when we hear the calling of that park. We were very fortunate with a lot of the projects we've done in the last 5 years that mission and vision came to us very early in the process. West School, we had the site, we had the school, we had the needs of the kids that go to school there. It was kind of dictated. On top of that, we layered Altima News creativity. We were all on board. The different projects we've done have kind of been dictated to us by their site and by the community's needs. Now we're trying to get out ahead of that a little bit, and the mission or the vision hasn't reached out to us yet. That's the problem I'm having because I'm not a visually creative person. But when I'm thinking about the fact that we have four playgrounds that need our attention, and yet we've had repeated conversations on the park board the last 12 years, that we're going to try to do something a little different at every park, I think we're going to see a vision for each of these unique parks to come forward. We're going to treat them all slightly differently to fill their mission for that community within our system. So I'm starting to get a little bit more excited as I remember the conversations we typically will be having 6 months from now when we flesh this out a little bit more. So we should make sure that before we get that far, we're comfortable with the numbers that we're willing to go to get this done, and then continue to push staff and our contractors for visionary jobs, whether it's $150,000 something or $500,000 something. We don't have to settle for ordinary in anything we do.
But I generally agree with that, Steve. But how I guess I would add to that is, I totally agree with Stephanie and Lisa that it's unlikely you're going to pull a lot of middle schoolers to Woodlawn. And maybe what we do is we say, oh, here's a pot of money that we add it to the old Green Bay effort for not next year, but the following year, and say maybe we spend that incremental amount to do something special for the middle schoolers. Maybe that's included in the Lincoln and Crescent thing, but let's not commit it now to one particular park before we know.
Woodlawn might have had more popularity when that White Hen Pantry or 7-Eleven was still open with the middle school kids, because that was someplace they could all get to on bikes.
That's a really interesting thought. You're right.
But with them gone, there's really not much for
Subway.
Those kids to do.
Subway and Dunkin' Donuts.
Subway Dunkin' Donuts.
It does get foot traffic. My problem, again, is if we are turning over to our designers a request for a plan, and we're putting a dollar amount on it, we have to know what it is we're asking them to do. And they will come up with a plan that meets that dollar amount. So I'm not understanding the cart before the horse thing, because if we say 400, 300, or 500,000, that's all a different kind of plan that they're going to come up with.
Can we say four parks and give a number? Do we have to?
No.
Yeah.
Can we just say, we're going to commit to this many parks, and here's the money, and now
you're
saying
no
to each?
Can we not do,
I mean,
the designer
from the budgetary standpoint, I'm sure Carol just went somewhere when I said that, you know, okay. Where she likes to track what project costs what.
Yeah.
What you're basically saying is, can we start with a four playground master plan and say we've got four sites, we have X amount of dollars, we know we have these four playgrounds, one of which is already toast, we got to move forward. So get a plan together and execute that plan, and you would be the community or the board would be able to give the staff and the consultants the direction, and if it's flushed out that Old Elm is 235 and Lincoln and Crescent is 4.25 and Woodlawn really turns out to only be 205, you have the flexibility to move those numbers around. Is that effectively?
That's what I'm saying. And so that the community doesn't say, okay, if it's my neighborhood and I see a dollar amount there, I have an expectation. We don't have a plan.
I can
so
say
if you put it together, it's not as we have more flexibility.
I can say in my previous experience, I've found that different groups in the community want to know why more money was spent on one end,
yes.
Where those people live versus where I live.
Mm-hmm.
I've been down that road before where we had to really keep the neighborhood park budget the same no matter what side of town it was on, no matter whose house was next to it. And I think that might be something we want to keep in the back of our minds, that we have a set baseline for these same projects wherever they may be. So I think, you know, we're either going to have a conversation and say, the board is going to say, and I think we're all saying it, Woodlawn is not a community park. It's a neighborhood park.
Right.
So whether or not it needs a $500,000 playground or a $225,000 playground, at the staff level, we know it needs a playground.
So couldn't you just say four parks, basic, you know, basically replace what's there is $225,000 for each one, and then that might leave some other money that we can add on to one of them in either next year or I guess more likely in 1920.
The problem is, if you don't know how much something's going to cost, you can't ask a designer to come up with
to design it.
But, well,
because
no,
we get
so
mad if they come back with a really expensive design
well,
that I can't afford.
They wouldn't know. I wouldn't know.
Well, we can't pay them to design a park that we don't want to pay for a $500,000 design that's going to cost us, say, $58,000 for 11%.
Is there a way of unbundling this and taking the two parks that we know we're not going to do anything different, which is the Elm and the Greenwood. The Vernon Jefferson. Those playgrounds are pretty, we know what we're going to do there because the footprint is given. We're not going to put in basketball courts and bike trails and things. Those are sort of done. It's the other two that are dependent on each other, depending.
In your mind, they're dependent on each other. Because in your mind, if the neighbors don't like it, on the old Green Bay Trail that you want to put in Woodlawn.
No, that is. There's a little element of that. With it, you know, they're not going to dictate where things are, but we know we want stuff for older kids, but we don't know where we want it. If we knew where we wanted it, this would be easy.
Right.
We'd know, okay, the bulk of the money is, because we know that's going to cost about that, is going to go to this park. The designer goes ahead and designs it, and they've got a budget limit. But if we don't know where we want that stuff, we can't set a budget.
But you just said that you kind of know that kids from Central go to Friends Park, so that you wanted something for older kids closer to downtown.
Well, we don't really know who goes to Woodlawn and if people would drive to Woodlawn. I don't really know. I don't really go over there.
You're not driving to Woodlawn now.
It's a cool park. Would I go? Maybe. But I'm not going to walk over there.
Well, that's what is happening as we design these destination parks, is what I call it. People do get in their car and drive. So they're driving to Shelton now. They're driving to West. We heard someone said that someone drove from Wilmette to West this weekend.
I would agree with that. People drive to Shelton, West, and Friends.
Right.
And
so they will, if you made a cool one in Woodlawn, they'll drive to that one. So they're going to keep on going as you keep on making these destination parks. It's just your decision. If you're trying to get kids to use a park where they go themselves, is that what you want is downtown? Mm-hmm. And do you think there's appetite in that area to put something like that on?
First of all, Old Green Bay is a big area,
mm-hmm.
right? So maybe that right next to the current playground is not good. I'm not suggesting it's not, but there's probably some area there where you can find something. And then also, just to expand our thinking maybe a little bit, a lot of them are already hanging out at the basketball court at Culp Park, which is even closer to downtown.
Exactly.
Right? So maybe maybe there's some different thinking about how we use Culp Park or the area just north of Veterans Park or something.
And that, it does feel like those are all connected.
Those are all.
Well, they all, the whole linear is connected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if we had cool stuff there, and I think we're all thinking kind of the same way as like Spider-Man Nav and Mudge.
So like cool stuff and 225 don't go in the same category.
No.
So like we cool stuff.
That we know for sure. That we all know.
Right. I think that's why we kind of want to say, let's make that area really cool because it is connected to the downtown. It's the center of Glencoe. I realize it's close to Front and it's close to Lakefront. But are more people going to go there than they're going to go to Woodlawn?
Absolutely.
I would think that would
so
be true.
So what you're saying is you want to flip. You want to give more to Lincoln Crescent and or
Old Green
Bay. Yes.
Linear.
Yes.
The whole kit caboodle.
Yes. Then, and Woodlawn will be a neighborhood park.
Yes.
That's fine.
But
okay.
Then we have to have tolerance for changing something that's always been just green space.
Yeah, you have to have, I'll let you know that that when the this is before any of us were here, when the backstop was taken out, or they suggested taking out that rusty backstop.
The one
and,
below
here. Yeah. It's
gone
and they
out.
Were gonna put a new one in, they went nuts that they were gonna put I wasn't here, I wasn't on the board.
Baseball played paid for a conceptual engineering study of the park and the residents at the time felt that it wasn't the appropriate use of the park next to their house.
Right.
And that was the end of the project.
So they came out, you know, we're talking like Berlin Field coming out, like that kind of thing. So that's over a backstop. So that rusty backstop was kept in there until 2 years ago when I finally said take it out because it was just embarrassing. But everybody was afraid to take it out because you never get it back in because then they wandered. So that's kind of the...
That's the underlying reality that we're facing.
That you're facing.
By moving in this direction, we're kind of saying, we're tough, we're going to do this.
Now, we can do it very classy. I think people think of some of those, you know, like if you're a linear skate park, that it's going to be a skate park. No, you can do it in ways.
Well, people have the image of the counterculture, like late 80s, early 90s kid at the skate park, and normal people go to these things. I mean, you know, you don't see your skate parks loaded with drug use and graffiti like you might have 25
years ago. But it's not a skate park. But you have to get away. Don't ever
not
skate,
a skate park.
Don't
sure,
ever
sure.
say skate park.
You're never going to lose the sports.
Yeah, I mean, there's a linear skate path in Gurney. It has little obstacles. You make it so that bikes and skateboards can use it because that's what's going to happen anyway, so you want to make it safe for both. I mean, we could talk, ultimately it's very creative and put it, you know, softly into that area would be something really, really cool.
And another really good thing is it's out in the open. It's not tucked behind something where nefarious activities can transpire among our youth.
It's right there.
It's very out in the open.
It's right out in the open.
Well, what I can tell people want is have more appetite, something with their bikes, maybe for anything else.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's killing me, because I can't tell these people that to go on.
Going to your comment about neighborhood sensitivity, about everybody getting their just desserts, it might make sense to say, you know, we've got four playgrounds that we're doing. They're all around 200 or 250. And then we've got this old Green Bay linear thing that might encompass some things for middle schoolers. But that's really more of a whole, what's the right term, a whole community park, not a neighborhood. Or
That's a community, Right.
Would you be comfortable giving a little more to the Woodlawn because it's just bigger?
Yes, I think we
than the tiny little.
Well, we're looking at 2.25 for the other 2 and 300 for Woodlawn.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I would look at it.
I would look at it.
Yeah.
So imagine for 300, we get a neighborhood park with one wow element.
Yeah.
Versus just a neighborhood park.
And that helps distinguish that park from the others. Great.
Like we should be able to
like a zip line. You know, one of those cool zip lines you could do.
We're gonna see a lot of stuff.
We're gonna see it.
It's so exciting.
It's like $10,000. It's not bad.
So we'll look at, that's what's fun about going to NRPA, which is still useful.
Yes, that's,
okay, so far we have, we'll do 225 for Crescent, Jefferson, and Old Elm. And
I know exactly what you're talking about.
We'll
try to put it in the West.
The Old Green Bay Linear Path plan, and that will be one of the first things that we task ultimately to do so that we can start those. And again, if they come up with some really cool stuff, we've allocated 365 for 1920, but that can be changed. Yeah. And the next year we can come back and say, wow, we want to jump on this, or we have donor opportunities or whatever going on there. Okay, so that works for us.
Where did we leave it with the Shelton Park Master Plan? Everybody understands that that is a pretty necessary item.
Yeah, it's about 20. So pretty much, I think that was all the changes that we had. I think we moved up, we did move up TACAF to next year, the year after 1920, because we don't think that's going to make it, and that's critical to our early childhood programming, DCFS licensing, all that good stuff. So we think we'll make it one more year, but after that. And what we'll do different there is that we're doing those as a true toddler. So we're going to actually have, is it two to or zero?
Two to, well, there's
one to
there's
two zero,
there's like one to three, and then two to five. We're going to have to. The fact that it's a directly related to the program gives us a little bit of flexibility in what we can put out there.
Right, for Children's Circle, we want to bring it down a little bit for those little ones that we're doing so much for.
The 17-month-old who can't help but go down the slide on the playground
every
day.
Right, exactly. So
we're
going to do something for them in that area. So that'll be, but we're going to use the same footprint and just maybe change out some of the planting so it's not solar planted and things like that.
No, that's a necessary evil, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. We have to have that.
Is there any, we haven't really discussed Lakefront Park.
Okay.
We have authorized a master plan.
We have.
For that.
We didn't already get one.
No. Okay. So
that's being worked on.
So what we're doing is not really a master plan. It's really what we call a feasibility study for sustainability of Lakefront Park, our bluffs, our buildings, and our beach is what the board authorized. Instead of going ahead with Lakefront Park, decided to take, and I don't know if you guys are on the board yet, to allocate about $70,000 to $80,000 to do that really feasibility, geotech feasibility study. So we're doing that. We'll present that, not the study, it's not done, but all the pieces of the puzzle, who will be working on that. We want to make sure, we directed ultimately, said, we want the best of the best working on this. This is our crown jewel. We want to make sure whatever we do, we want the best doing this. So they've assembled a team, and they'll be presenting what their ideas for this study will be in the October 3rd meeting.
So the scope.
The reason I brought that up at all was I would just like for the board to keep in the back of their mind that when we look to implement some of these suggestions that are going to come up for Glencoe's crown jewel, that if we wind up spending more than the $225,000 on the park, it might be a very appropriate investment when we get to that juncture. I'm just thinking the number of families I see using that from Glencoe and from all over, and the number, I see a lot of people my age that are new grandparents taking their grandkids to that park when Friends Park is too crowded.
I'm sorry, you mean the one playground?
Well, what we'll also be doing sometime this year is bringing Lakefront Park plan back. We haven't officially approved that plan, so I want to finish talking about that and want to get approved so that we can then start to approach donors. If that's something we wanted to.
Well, I'm getting a feeling that we seem to be comfortable with the $225,000 refreshing expense for our smaller community parks, our smaller neighborhood parks, and we understand that notable parks could run up to $500,000.
Right.
I'm saying Lakefront, in my mind, falls somewhere in between that.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to start the direction of taking out drinking fountains in neighborhood parks?
I would support that entirely.
It's expensive. It is expensive, not only staff time, but actually putting the infrastructure back in, wouldn't you say, Chris?
You mean constantly maintaining it? Absolutely. I mean, I would say that the drinking fountains are probably in the top five heaviest damaged items in the park system. I mean, they are really a constant source of I will say, though, when one of them is down, the calls pour in immediately. So it is a very hot topic. You know, if I typically will
find... Is it the same drinking fountains that people seem to notice the most?
So the drinking fountains that get the hot traffic are the ones that get broken all the time, obviously. Friends is separate because it's on top of the sandbox, which is why it has a problem. But places like Woodlawn, places like Jefferson and Vernon, Watts Park, a couple of areas in Shelton Park where there's multiple fountains... people are going to know when they're gone. So if we want to take them out, we have to know that people are going to call and want to know why it's gone.
See, in my Shelton Park isn't a neighborhood park.
No.
The way I think of it.
No, correct.
So it should have a water
fountain. It has two.
Yes, that would.
It has two.
Jefferson and Vernon does not.
Where you should have water fountains are at athletic fields and on the Green Bay Trail or any other like high aerobic impact place, right? So if there was one like on the trail at Shelton Park, that would be better than where it currently is. But anyway, I can live with that. But if you said it's going to save us a ton of operational money as well as capital expense to get rid of it in neighborhood parks, I don't see that being a major problem.
Okay.
It's very unusual to have in neighborhood parks. It's athletic fields, jogging, paths.
But Watts would be considered an athletic field, correct?
Yes.
So that would be one where we might salvage it, or what do you think?
I mean, they're all functioning.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're advising to take them out because they have to be repaired.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. But when we do Jefferson and Vernon, it will not be with a water fountain. That's what we've.
Sounds great.
Okay. So advancing it, so pretty much the only change is that we're going to take Woodlawn from 500 to 300.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, everything else will remain the same on the staff recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So we did move Everly to operating as well, so we can go after year versus in one big push.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Just because natural areas, it's not just one year.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure that it's going to happen.
It will. We're putting it in. We'll make sure it's.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it'll be a prescribed burn. It's right. Is that?
Yeah, we've been working with Pizzo and Associates to really kind of get together a plan. They're really the industry experts in this area.
Not Melrose. That would be more spectacular.
I would agree with that. But the sanctuary, we put some significant resources into it 2 years ago. But it's a long term, and I think beyond just a master plan, I think it has to go into operating, because if we go in there and cut everything down and plant all new material and then we don't come back, we just wasted our money.
Right.
I mean, it's a similar situation too. We did a project on the bluff and then we didn't have the operating funds to continue to maintain it. And
it's very similar to our tennis courts. We're going to be putting walking the tennis courts yearly into our. That's not capital, it's operating. We're just going to put it in there to do it. Same with Everly. Same with replacing the sand on the beach.
Yeah.
That goes out of operating in the beach account. So
because
those things still aren't capital items, they're operating items. They're not going to be forgotten.
With the sanctuary, if we continue to take care of it, eventually it won't be a huge expense.
Right.
It'll be 2 or 3 days out there, every third month versus whole crews on site doing brush cutting, preparing for a burn. So it's going to be a cumulative operation there. But I think it's going to be very beneficial to that area to have that kind of attention.
Okay, so I just need you to say
one more quick thing.
Yeah, I just want to raise the issue of beach and the erosion that we've had. Since I know Bobby's here for multiple reasons, but obviously he sees it. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. If you guys
have seen it,
beach, it's really mind-boggling. And is that going to be so expensive to fix that it impacts the capital plan? That's why I'm bringing it up now.
Well, you were on board. We've had the conversation here that we have applied to be really the pilot program for the reclaimed sand out of Waukegan. But even if we were to go to the conventional route with applying to buy barge sand, we still have to have the Army Corps of Engineer approvals and all these other things before we can add anything to our beach. And while we might all agree in concept that's needed, it takes a while to come through. So we have the time to do the budgeting. We've applied for the sand.
Mm-hmm. I guess we have to wait and see for what this the feasibility study comes back and what the recommendations are. But at the same time, can you say we're not going to do anything just to save a boating beach? That would have to be a big discussion of the board, and it can take place after, I don't think we should stop what we're doing this year. We won't have that plan back till far after that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to have to be a discussion of the board to decide that. We've had this problem on the Boating Beach probably 20, 25 years ago. The water is equally this high. We saw the same erosions happening. It comes and goes. I know that there's the water pipe is exposed down there, which has limited our ability to, I guess, smooth out sand and things like that. And my guess is that the village will be addressing that issue.
Yeah, that was my question. Is the village taking some responsibility for protecting its asset, that pipe?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
So they're working on a plan right now what to do with that, and if it's relocated or whatever is going to happen, I can't speak to that.
Mm. What is their obligation there? Because erosion is one thing. We can't hold the village or anybody else responsible for erosion. That's a natural phenomenon. But they now have their asset laying on top of the boating beach, which significantly impacts operations there.
Well, they have the easement for that. Obviously, many years ago, they were granted an easement to put the pipe there.
Presumably, the easement was that it be underground, though.
Right.
Typically,
so,
yeah.
They will be addressing that issue. They do have an obligation for their pipe, and we'll be in discussions with them what that means.
Well,
and where it be, mm-hmm, whether it's buried further or relocated, mm-hmm, we are in discussions with them about what.
Let's take a little longer-term view in this crazy weather world that we find ourselves in, and say that we're not going to be returning to the historically low water levels that we've had the last 20 years, and that we're now on an upswing in the lake level trend. Can something be done with some of our older lockers and some of that other infrastructure to allow us to have boats close farther west, you know, closer to the base of the bluff, as we have to tear down, throw away, and replace some of these lockers? Perhaps we should be conceptual, you know, and this is not this year, next year, the year after, but we should probably anticipate we might have continued rising water levels, and this is a dance that we're probably going to be doing every year to one degree or another going forward. We probably need to figure out a way of maximizing all the space we have closer to the water and putting these lockers farther back. Everybody wanted everything right next to each other for convenience.
Actually, we're starting internal discussions about just that, and we'll be bringing a recommendation forward to the board once we work through and talk through all those things and see what the village is doing with their pipe. So we'll be bringing those recommendations back, but we're not really ready to talking about those ideas.
Okay, we're just trying to recapture more usable space as Mother Nature takes some of our valuable real estate away from us.
Right.
And, you know, we can continue to throw money into putting sand there every few years with careful planning. But at the same time, if the water level's going high and the storms are getting wilder, we need to make other provisions if we want to maintain the same level of boating usage.
So just for clarification, we've done a lot of regrading over the last 4 to 6 years, but we haven't brought in any material.
We haven't brought sand.
I understand. We've reclaimed a lot of sand, too.
We have. So there'll be more to tell as the situation with the water pipe gets resolved by the village, and we'll be back to talk about that once we know.
I just see some of the lockers are a bit sad.
Yeah.
Looking, and it's something to think about over the next few years as that comes up.
So we'll look at that. We were talking about that today, so we'll figure out that plan and bring it forward.
It's safe to say we're all upset about Mother Nature right now and what's happened to the beach. We understand, and we're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The best way to
talk to everyone who has the same concerns. And I know you guys have talked about this at several meetings about your involvement with getting the sand, and so I don't think it's not on any of our minds. And that study coming back and what that's going to tell us. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll keep working on that for a resolution.
Do you think the village will be able to update you in time for our next board meeting?
I will keep you posted if they are.
Did we discuss having our own writing stables in town yet?
No, I do not have that.
On the agenda after the public pool, yes. Okay, I think we're up to matters from the public.
Pool, huh?
And nothing? Okay. Other business?
Okay, the last thing I do is, and Commissioner Underdog's not here, is that we're going to be embarking on the strategic planning process. Now, the strategic planning process is totally different than, you guys all aware, I want to tell you this, than the master plan project. It kind of looks like our master plan looks at our infrastructure, our parks, our whatever, and this looks at more of our planning, our staffing, things like that. So what we're looking for is, I want you to read this over, but we're recommending hiring Heller and Heller Consulting. Barbara Heller has worked with us on our master plan, so she comes with a lot of life experience. worked with Hitchcock on that whole process, led the facilitation, led the everything associated with that mass plan. Heller, Barbara Heller is known nationwide, not just in Illinois. She works with park districts and cities throughout the United States. She becomes very well respected. Dudley's not here, but he, yeah. but
and,
both
and,
of us.
And she's also very familiar with Glencoe because she did a master plan that, as we all know, is about that thick.
Which saves us some time for someone trying to get to know Glencoe, which is very, very unique. Mm-hmm. So we're going to look for approval of this in September so we can get started.
I would have a hard time supporting this without hearing from Dudley.
She can speak to that.
Yes.
I understand.
Okay.
And I've been through a few of these, and this isn't the way my brain works. This is particularly or peculiar to me. So Dudley has helped me get my arms around the benefits and advantages of this, and I'm going to need that kick in the pants again. Sorry.
Yeah, Dudley's the right guy for that.
Right.
He's very much a, he thinks like this. So,
and he agreed?
Yes, he did. Yes, we did have a discussion about it. He agreed that we need, I think he and I both share a consternation about the number of different versions of strategic plans that we had when we first started as board members. And sort of this roadmap, and then the strategic plan, and then the rewriting of it. Oh, it was so confusing. So this sort of like resets it to today, and with the right person. So.
And you should do these every 3 to 5 years, so we're our
system. And what does something like this cost?
It costs $20,000, $19,500. It takes the course of 4 months.
Bargain.
It's a bargain.
It really is. She's looking at
I was going to say that does seem like
Every executive director is looking for you on their board
now.
She's giving us a deal. She's worked for Glencoe before. Mm-hmm. She flies into town and does other park districts and has other business in town. So she'll put that in with that. So she knows a lot of the work has been done already in the master plan. We've talked about a lot of things. We did the mission and vision already. We won't be changing that. New with the master plan. So,
how much interaction, if any, does she plan to have with residents directly? Or
it's put out here. But what we're not going to do is there was a fee for optional day of key leader meetings. We're not going to exercise that option because we've already met with the key leaders during the master plan process, and then my relationship with them. I get a lot of feedback, but there is community visioning meetings in here. So that's phase two.
Oh, yeah.
You're very good at these. Doesn't allow districts.
I wonder how you view the survey that we did as part of the master planning project. Is that irrelevant because it's too old? Does that supersede this because there were 800 responses, whereas this would be a couple dozen people, I guess?
But she's the one that did the survey, and she didn't administer it herself. I think that's still a valid survey.
Okay.
We haven't had a lot of change. She'll incorporate that in, but she'll also do another, other data review also, and collection in different methods.
All right, so does anyone have anything more to add to this?
Just one question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other area or issue, you probably would have brought it up, but that you get a lot of calls on that we're not addressing right now?
Lately, our tennis courts, I think we're addressing those, cleaning them yearly, filling the cracks.
Dog park
is what I get the most on.
That we're not addressing.
That we're not addressing, that's it, right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would make a motion to adjourn.
All right.
Great.
Anyone want to second it, or we're not there yet?
I think you're there, and I think we're there. We need a so moved.
So moved.
All in
second?
Favor?
Second.
Who's
so moved?
Okay.
The so moved was the second.
We're a little out of, yeah. Okay.